And now a look at local and statewide news. As the University of Alaska hunkers down to weather current budget woes, the effects are also being felt at Kodiak College. But Interim Director Betty Walters is positive the college will continue to serve local students and the community well, despite the challenges and uncertainty. KMXT's Maggie Wall has more.
Last week, leaders at the University of Alaska Anchorage announced that they were proposing to delete, suspend, or revise more than two dozen academic programs. The goal is to meet a target set during the budget negotiations last year to make $70 million in budget cuts to the university system over the next 3 years. Because many students in Kodiak depend on UAA and the university system as a whole for some of their classes, or plan to continue on for bachelor's degrees, changes in programming within the university system could have a big impact on local students. But Kodiak College Interim Director Betty Walters is positive that the local campus will continue to serve its students and the community. She cites examples, such as working with students to find similar classes if one they needed is canceled, and to tailor local classes and programs to those needed by the Kodiak workforce.
Probably as we look as a local community, what are the needs and the wants and the places that we can fill in with programs, be they certifications or actual associate degrees, that will better serve the communities of Kodiak Island? Because we're not only focusing on our own major town population, but we're looking at our villages as well.
Some of those community-specific classes include welding, marine science, getting a six-pack license to be a skipper, fishing boat repairs, and others that Kodiak residents take to learn more about a subject that interests them or that is important to life in a fishing community. Walter said some classes were dropped for lack of interest, and some had too few students to offer the class, but they were offered anyway, if students needed it for a degree. And some cuts were made because of the loss of adjunct teachers.
Now, in some cases, they were students who were in their final semesters in earning their associate's degree, and so those classes went even with the lowest enrollment. And then there are those students who were registered for classes being taught by an adjunct, and we had to eliminate some of those classes, but other faculty members took on those students into either that same class or a similar class that could be offered so that they did not lose out.
While much of the class shuffling was a direct result of budget cuts, others were because of lower enrollment, which may in part have been an indirect result of so much uncertainty regarding how the university system would handle last year's massive budget cuts. Enrollment at UAA in Anchorage fell by 1,500 students, or nearly 10%, when comparing the fall semester of 2018 to last fall, according to a report by Alaska Public Media. Enrollment was down here in Kodiak as well. Walter says 757 students took at least one class at the college in the fall of 2018. That number fell by 74 students to 683 in the fall of 2019. That roughly 10% drop matches that of UAA for the same time period. Locally, spring enrollment, the current semester, is down as well. 614 students are enrolled as compared to 731 last spring. That's a drop of 117 students, and 69 fewer than this past fall semester. Walter says students aren't the only one wondering what the future holds.
Absolutely. Staff and faculty understand that everyone is concerned. Every time you begin to talk about millions of dollars, it can't just be cutting a class. it impacts those who teach and those who support those classes. And so you have that whole faculty issue as well.
She said it's important that local residents and businesses provide input into what they want to see taught at the college and how the campus can better serve Kodiak. They can contact her office anytime or take advantage of upcoming public input requests from the statewide university system.
We're on a slim line right now with the people that we have on campus, and we want to keep our enrollment up and the money flowing in, not only through enrollment, but through the state, for those people to continue to be able to provide the services that Kodiak Island wants.
Walter said all campuses are reviewing their programs and seeking local input on how to tailor their schools to fit the needs of their community, as well as students all around the state. We had help with this story from Alaska Public Media. For KMXT News, I'm Maggie Wall.
The Alaska House passed the state budget on Tuesday along caucus lines. Nome Democratic Representative Neil Foster says the budget was based on give and take.
We were able to get this budget out a whole week earlier than at any time over the past decade, on track for a 90-day session.
The budget bill doesn't fund permanent fund dividends. House leaders say PFDs will be addressed later in a separate bill. Members of the Republican House minority voted against the budget, citing the lack of PFD funding. But the body rejected more than a dozen minority caucus amendments aimed at increasing current PFDs or cutting spending. It also rejected paying back past dividend amounts that were cut. Representative Mark Newman, a minority caucus Republican from Big Lake, says his constituents feel that government spending is a problem. He says Republican Governor Mike Dunleavy introduced a budget with nearly flat spending to reduce conflict.
We've seen what his preferred budget was last year. The legislature had a fit, the public had a fit about a lot of the issues. He introduced a flat budget to take the sail out, the wind out of that sail, I believe.
Kenai Majority Caucus Republican Gary Knopp praised Dunleavy's approach this year.
He laid out a budget that was a great starting point for us, not draconian in style. It was pretty flat with last year's, and it gave us the opportunity to get off the ground running. And so you really have to thank him for that.
Juneau Democratic Representative Sarah Hannon says the state still has unmet needs, but she supported the budget.
And I urge you to support the operating budget because it is a compromise of what we need to do to keep Alaska open for business and to keep Alaska prepared for the 21st century.
Spending on everything other than PFDs would be similar to the budget proposed by Dunleavy. The portion of the budget directly controlled by the legislature would be slightly less than $4.5 billion. The budget includes a cut to the university budget that the governor and the university regents agreed to in August. The House budget would spend roughly $10 million more than the budget Dunleavy proposed. The largest increase to Dunleavy's proposal was to the Alaska Marine Highway System. Kodiak Representative Louise Stutes is a Republican in the majority caucus. She says the increase would start to bring back the ferries.
That's step one in bringing back transportation to some of our stranded rural communities. That's filling their freezers, getting them rides to the doctors.
The largest cut was against sending prisoners out of state. The administration has dropped that proposal since the governor introduced the budget. The budget bill now heads over to the Senate. Kodiak House Representative Louise Stutes went on a fact-finding mission on the state of the Alaska Marine Highway System. She says she found vessels in poor shape, low crew morale, and a lack of leadership. As Coast Alaska's Jacob Resnick reports, she recently visited the ferry's headquarters in Ketchikan.
Kodiak Republican Louise Stutes co-chairs the House Transportation Committee. She and an aide flew to Ketchikan to inspect the state's ferry fleet.
It's very sad. It's just very sad to see what has happened to our marine highway system.
She reported her findings on Monday morning to the Capitol Press Corps.
It's inconceivable to see the dereliction that has occurred in the maintenance of these vessels, and I don't know how to refer to it in any other capacity. The captains are frustrated, the engineers are frustrated, the crews are frustrated, they're abandoning ship, literally.
By that, she means veteran crew members are retiring early or finding other jobs, as some have been without paychecks for weeks. Regional service was abruptly suspended in January after the only mainliner running broke down. Representative Stutes also accused the Department of Transportation of downplaying the damage to the ferry Malaspina. The ship has been tied up without a crew since late last year. That's despite the advice of engineers, who warned the ship could be damaged by the elements if not properly laid up. By all accounts, freezing temperatures in January caused some of the ship's pipes to burst while moored in Ketchikan's Ward Cove.
We were told that there was a slight pipe bursting on the Malaspina and that there was just a little bit of water damage.
That's the official version from the Department of Transportation. But during her inspection of the ship, Stutes and an aide say they personally saw at least 10 staterooms with standing water.
And as we went from room to room, you could walk on it and it was squishy. The carpet was wet from water. So it wasn't just a little insignificant leak. It was a flood. And why? Why did they tie that vessel up and allow those pipes to freeze?
Coast Alaska filed a public records request in February seeking a month's worth of maintenance records. The agency replied that those records don't exist. A broader request was filed last week seeking answers. It remains pending. In a statement Monday, the Department of Transportation said wet carpet is still being dried, and it says the Malaspina could still be returned to service if it's needed. But that wasn't the impression Stutes got when she was on board.
Clearly, they have no intent of running that vessel again.
The Kodiak lawmaker also raised questions whether the regional shutdown of the Marine Highway was necessary. She says crew members expressed frustration that the state was paying for two other ferries to be moored in the Vigor, Alaska shipyard rather than put back into service.
We had the Kennecott and the Tustamina pulled out, sat down there in dry dock for 2 months. The shipyard had no work orders, but yet the state is paying $90,000 a month to have those vessels tied up for no good reason. They could have been operating.
Transportation officials didn't specifically address this point, but in a statement, the agency said both ships were due to begin their annual overhauls in January, and that the Marine Highway didn't have the budget to bring either ship back into service temporarily. Stutes conceded to reporters that the ferry system's woes predate the Dunleavy administration, but she says the governor's response to the shutdown has been inadequate.
And it just seems like it's not been an emergency for some reason. You see all the pictures of these rural communities with no food on in their grocery stores and having to charter small airplanes to bring in food and diapers and milk. I mean, that's outrageous. And then, so what do? We form another committee.
Governor Mike Dunleavy has appointed a working group to advise the administration on the future of the ferry system. Representative Stutes is a member of that 9-person group whose recommendations are due in late September. This month, the state chartered an Allen Marine tour boat to make passenger runs to several villages. The ferry Taslina is also slated to come back online this month in Upper Lynn Canal. But mainline service with connections to the lower 48 aren't expected to resume until mid-April. Reporting in Juneau, I'm Jacob Resnick.
A 36-year-old man from the North Slope village of Koktovik was sentenced to 3 months in prison last week for wasting a polar bear he shot outside his house. Koktovik is seeing more and more visits from bears as the climate warms and their sea ice habitat melts away. Nat Herz with Alaska's Energy Desk has this story on how last week's case ties into a bigger bear-related problem.
At the southern edge of Koktovik, a tiny village on Alaska's North Slope, the polar bear came around Chris Gordon's house on a winter night. It was drawn by whale meat left in the yard that Gordon was preparing for a village feast. Here's how he described it at his sentencing hearing Friday.
I didn't want to kill it, really, but that thing just kept coming back.
Gordon shot and killed the bear, which is a federally protected marine mammal listed as threatened under the Endangered Species Act. He later posted a photo on Facebook of the bear lying in his yard with a caption, "Got put down tonight." On Friday, federal judge Ralph Beistlein sentenced Gordon to pay a $4,500 fine and serve 3 months in prison, not for killing the bear, but for what he did afterward. As a coastal-dwelling Alaska native, Gordon was entitled to kill the bear under the Marine Mammal Protection Act, but only if he did so without wasting the animal. And instead of harvesting its meat or salvaging the bear's skin, Gordon left its carcass in his yard for 5 months before having it moved to the village dump and burned. Here's Beistlein, the judge.
We're not criticizing shooting the bear. We're criticizing the manner in which it was dealt with once killed.
Gordon's criminal prosecution for a single violation of the Marine Mammal Protection Act is unusual, but his case shows how it's become common for polar bears to disrupt village life in Kaktovik, which sits on an island at the edge of the Beaufort Sea. As climate change melts sea ice and drives the bears ashore, residents say they've been under increasing stress. Some villagers have capitalized on the bears' presence by becoming tour guides, but other residents argue that the tourism boom is making the bears more comfortable around people and risking everyone's safety. In the last tourist season, there were two close encounters with polar bears that could have killed people. Edward Rexford, the president of Kaktovik's tribal government, said at Friday's hearing.
Polar bears are getting habituated to humans and are causing human health and welfare problems. This is a very dangerous community that we live in.
While many residents have voiced frustration about polar bears' encroachment into Kaktovik, people were still dismayed by what happened to the bear killed by Gordon. As the carcass languished in his yard, one unnamed witness posted a video about it on Facebook, which prosecutors played at Friday's sentencing hearing. She describes the bear using the Inupiaq word for it, Nanook.
And here we have a dead Nanook because this family refused to put their food away properly and be shepherds of this blessing. I am so upset right now. Kaktovik, we need to come together and stop this. This is not okay, and it's crossed a line.
In a memo to the judge arguing for a lighter sentence, Gordon's attorney argued that the federal government's case demonstrated a misunderstanding and ignorance of Alaska Native custom and cultural practices. That argument echoes a separate one also made by village residents, that the federal managers of the neighboring Arctic National Wildlife Refuge prioritize the well-being of polar bears and tourists over the safety of Native people who live in Kaktovik. Here's Fenton Rexford, a Kaktovik elder at a community meeting in June.
We know and respect the interest of the urban people seem to have in protecting the endangered species of animals and plants here. What about us?
Federal authorities say they did not pursue the case against Gordon lightly or out of a lack of sensitivity to the impact of polar bears on his village. Prosecutors wrote it was hard to imagine a violation of the Marine Mammal Protection Act that was more brazen than Gordon's. In a prepared statement, a top Fish and Wildlife Service official says the agency has been working closely with Kaktovik residents for more than a decade to address human-bear conflicts. And he says the agency understands the challenges that bears pose to the community. In Anchorage, I'm Nat Herz.
Today's KMXT Local News is brought to you in part by Discover Kodiak, a one-stop source for visitor information on Kodiak and other destinations around the state. On the web at kodiak.org and at the Visitor Center in the Ferry Terminal Building at 100 Marine Way, 486-4782.
This is Alaska Fish Radio. I'm Lainey Welch. Seaweeds win big. More on the Symphony of Seafood results after this.
Integrated Marine Systems is the leader in marine refrigeration in Alaska. Simple, reliable, built to last. Visit imspacific.com.
Bullwhip Hot Sauce was the biggest winner in the Alaska Symphony of Seafood competition that wrapped up last week in Juneau. The hot sauce, made with bull kelp by Juneau-based Barnacle Seafoods, took home the grand prize in a field of 20 entries, four of which were seaweed products. The Symphony Contest begins in November at Pacific Marine Expo, where all entries are judged by an expert panel and first place winners are selected. Second and third place and the grand prize winners are kept under wraps until the Juneau event, where legislators and others sample the entries and select their favorites in retail, food service, and beyond the plate categories. That category was added 4 years ago to open doors for new items made from seafood byproducts.
It can be anything, things that are edible, such as fish oil capsules, or it could be things that are non-edible, such as salmon leather wallets.
Julie Decker is director of the Alaska Fisheries Development Foundation, host of the Symphony for 27 years. Barnacle's Bullwhip Hot Sauce also took first place at retail. A cod fish and chips meal kit by Alaskan Leader Seafoods placed second, and sea asparagus pesto by Seattle's Foraged and Found came in third. For food service, Alaska Southern Style Wild Wings by Highliner Foods took top honors. Second was Alaskan Kombu Seaweed made with Kodiak Kelp by Blue Evolution. Salmon Dumplings by Typhoon USA placed third. For Beyond the Plate, Juno's Wild by Nature Alaskan Fish Skin Jewelry came in first, followed by Pescadots Dog Treats from Drool Central, a mom and pup barkery of Anchorage. Find links at alaskafishradio.com. Fish Radio is also brought to you by Ocean Beauty Seafoods. In Kodiak, I'm Lainey Welch.
Fish Radio is supported in part by Joy Crafts, specializing in marine safety equipment. U.S. Coast Guard approved AMC instruction for commercial fishing vessel safety procedures and drills, serving Kodiak for over 25 years. 486-6293 at 445 Shahafka Circle.
This is the Island Messenger, a look at personal messages, the weather, and community announcements.
Welcome to this noon edition of the Island Messenger. It's 17 degrees in Kodiak today. Partly cloudy and breezy. This afternoon should see some isolated snow showers before 1 p.m. Partly sunny with a high near 20 degrees and northwest winds 25 to 30 miles per hour. A 20% chance of precipitation this afternoon. Tonight, mostly clear. Lows around 16 degrees. Northwest winds 25 to 35 miles per hour. And tomorrow should be sunny with highs near 27. In Homer today, it's 12 degrees and fair. Today, sunny with a high near 15. And in Anchorage, it's 10 degrees, just a few clouds out. Today should be sunny with a high near 12 up there. North winds 5 to 10 miles per hour. Tonight, mostly clear with a low around negative 2. North winds around 10 to 15 miles per hour. Today is March 4th. Sunrise this morning was at 7:54 a.m. Sunset tonight will be at 6:50 p.m. That's 10 hours and 56 minutes of daylight, which is 4 minutes 59 seconds more than we got yesterday. The record high on this day was 50 degrees in 1944. The record low was 2 degrees in 1971. Looking at our tides for today, low tide for Kodiak will be out at 4:01 p.m., 1.21 feet. High tide will be back in 11 p.m., flat at 5.43 feet. Over on the west side, low tide's at 4:26 p.m., 2.77 feet. High tide will be at 11:11 p.m., 10.57 feet. All right, looking at our community announcements for today, the Kodiak Harvest Food Co-op is having its annual meeting on Wednesday. That's today at 5 p.m. It'll be from 5 to 7 at the Kodiak Baptist Mission. They would like you to join for tacos featuring locally sourced ingredients in an update from board of directors and help, or they're asking to help choose the vision of their storefront by voting on new board members. The co-op hopes to see you and continue working toward their goal of opening a full service grocery here in Kodiak. To learn more, email kodiakharvest@gmail.com or visit kodiakharvest.org. Kodiak Duplicate Bridge Club meets every Wednesday night at the Senior Center from 7 p.m. to 10:30 p.m. Play is open to anyone who is familiar with the game of bridge. Partners can be arranged for players who do not have one. Contact 654-4246 for more information. Coming up this week at the Public Library, today at 3 p.m. is Lego Fun. It's a drop-in program for youth and adults. Children under 10 must be accompanied by an adult. Tomorrow at 10:30 a.m., it's Family Discovery Storytime for children ages 3 to 8 and their families. Also on Thursday at 3:30 p.m. is After School Science. You can stop by the craft room to participate in fun and surprising science. Children under 10 must be accompanied by an adult. Also on Friday at 10:30 a.m., it's Spanish Storytime. Children ages 5 to 8 are welcome to enjoy Spanish songs, stories, crafts, and games. And stop by the library on Saturday, March 7th at 1 p.m. to learn the art of making paper. On Thursday at 6:30 p.m., the Borough Assembly is having a regular meeting in Borough Assembly Chambers. On Monday, March 9th, 7 p.m., Service Area Number 1 is having a board meeting in the Borough Conference Room. The Kodiak Arts Council is hosting an arts and adventure auction. Join them for food, wine, live music, art appreciation, and bidding for a cause. The Kodiak Arts Council's 31st Annual Arts and Adventure Auction will be held on Saturday, April 25th at the Downtown Convention Center. The event features live and silent auctions with hundreds of items, including fabulous art for every budget, travel adventures, fishing charters, and local seafood, jewelry, health and beauty packages, services to local businesses, and much more. Doors to the auction open at 6 p.m. and the live auction starts at 7. All proceeds from the auction support the Arts Council's mission to create opportunities for the people of Kodiak to experience and participate in the arts. Donations of artwork are accepted year-round. For more information, contact the participating venues or call the Arts Council at 486-5291 or through email at kodiakartscouncil@gmail.com. And that's all I have for you for today.
Listen for the Island Messenger here on Public Radio KMXT 3 times a day. Monday through Friday at 9 a.m., during the midday report at 12:20, and in the evening at 7 o'clock. If you have a community announcement or personal message, including lost and found items or pets, you can call KMXT at 486-3181, fax us at 486-2733, or email psa@kmxt.org.